College football playoff shakeup, another wild week in the NFL, and LeBron James continues to prove why he's not the GOAT. LaValley Sports Talk begins right now. What's going on, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the LaValley Sports Talk Podcast, brought to you by the Soundline Network. As always, I'm your host, Chris LaValley. Hope you all had a wonderful Thanksgiving. You're doing well and staying safe. Let's kick it off and talk some college football. So we had a major upset over the weekend and then a pathetic showing by Michigan State. The major upset was Oregon getting thumped by Utah. It was the worst loss by a top 25 team for Oregon, or that Oregon played against in school history. This eliminates the entire conference from playoff contention. Oregon will definitely not make the college football playoff, nor will a team from the Pac-10 for the fifth year in a row. I don't know what it is about Utah that spooks Oregon, but every single year, Oregon loses to Utah. It's like clockwork at this point. I don't get it. Oregon is a much better football team. Utah already had three losses coming into that football game. There's no reason for Oregon not to show up, or at least not put on a better showing. It was 28-0 at halftime. It was abysmal, absolutely abysmal performance by Oregon. And then we look at the Michigan State and Ohio State football game. Michigan State got rolled. It was 42-0 at one point in this ball game. I understand Michigan State was a 19-point dog. I get it. No one was expecting Michigan State to win the game, but nobody was expecting Ohio State to do what it did. I mean, it just dominated every aspect of that football game in an embarrassing showing by a rival. Michigan State and their head coach Tucker was getting all this praise. Oh my God, he's like the coach of the year. He deserves an extension. In his two seasons as head coach for Michigan State, he has lost to Ohio State by no less than at least 25 points. 25 points. And you guys are talking about giving him a long-term extension? Why? For all the hate that Jim Harbaugh gets, and Harbaugh deserves all the criticism he gets. The dude's never beaten Ohio State, and he's very likely not going to do it again this weekend. But you can't sit there and criticize Jim Harbaugh in one breath, but then on the other breath say, well, our guy over here in Michigan State, it's okay that he does. It's okay that he gets blown out every single time he plays Ohio State. We should still give him an extension. Are you kidding me? Get out of here. Michigan State just didn't show up. It honestly makes the Michigan loss to Michigan State, in my opinion, that much worse. So when we go to the rankings right now, I'm going to reveal the top four. Michigan is at 5. Michigan, to me, shouldn't even be in the top 10. The fact that you lost to Michigan State and Michigan State got rolled by Ohio State in the fashion that they did on Saturday, I'm sorry. As much as I would love to see Michigan make it to the college football playoff, as much as I would love to see them beat Ohio State, I don't understand how you can keep Michigan so high with the way that Michigan State played against Ohio. It doesn't make any sense to me. Michigan losing to Michigan State, as far as I'm concerned, in the fashion that they did, if you remember that ball game, when they were up by 17 points at the beginning of the third quarter, and then they blew that game. And then you look at the way Michigan State showed up against Ohio State this past weekend. I don't see how you can put Michigan in the top 10. It's too bad of a loss as far as I'm concerned. But anyway, enough about what I think. Let's get to what the rankings are as they stand right now. 1 through 4, I thought coming in, the way that this was going to work, it was going to go Georgia, Bama, Ohio State, and Cincinnati. I figured with the loss of Oregon, they were going to get knocked out. Ohio State was just going to slide up to 3. Cincinnati was going to slide right into 4. I'm actually impressed that the committee had Ohio State leapfrog Alabama and move all the way up to 2, which makes sense given the body of work. That's what they always talk about, is body of work, body of work, body of work. Well, Ohio State has better wins against higher ranked opponents than Alabama does. And Bama has struggled. As much as I think Bama is still the best team in college football, I still believe that. Again, it's kind of like, you know, the whole Bill Belichick Patriots aspect. Until they lose, you always got to believe that they're going to be there at the end. That's how I feel about Nick Saban. He's the boogeyman. But given what we've seen, the body of the work, what's been on paper, what we've watched every single Saturday, Ohio State does have the better wins as opposed to Alabama. So I am impressed that they actually had a Big Ten team leapfrog an SEC team, because you don't see that very often. So as it stands right now, it's Georgia, Ohio State, Bama, Cincinnati, Michigan, like I said before, is at 5, and Notre Dame is at 6. The reason why Notre Dame is at 6, and the reason why they're justifying it, is, and here's the key, is I almost believe they finally put Cincinnati in at 4 so they could justify bringing Notre Dame up to 6 or 5. But they put them at 6. So this way, if Cincinnati loses and Notre Dame wins out, so if they win this weekend, Notre Dame's done. They're not in a conference, so they won't play a conference championship game next weekend. They'll be able to slide Notre Dame in and put them back in the college football playoff, which would be a fucking joke. Notre Dame has no business being in the college football playoff. I said it last week. I said it weeks before. And I'll say it again and again and again. Every time they make it into the college football playoff, they get rolled. They are the least deserving football team. I don't care who they've beaten. I don't care what's on their schedule. As soon as they make the college football playoff, they fall flat on their face, and it's not a game worth watching ever. And Notre Dame, I'm sorry, is not that impressive of a football team this year. Last year's team that made it to the playoff was more impressive than what we've seen this season. Anyway, so Cincinnati's finally at 4. If Cincinnati wins out, it looks like Cincinnati's actually going to get in, which I was wrong about. I had said weeks and weeks ago that there was no way the committee was going to put Cincinnati in. They were going to find every excuse in the book to not do it. So I was definitely wrong about that. As we move forward here, so again, Cincinnati's got to win out. Georgia very likely is going to make it in. Bama is very likely going to make it in, because I believe Bama's going to beat Georgia in the SEC title game. And that's not going to matter, though. If the only way Bama's not in the conversation is if they lose to Georgia, if they get blown out by Georgia. If it's a close game against Georgia or Georgia loses, either way, Bama's in. And Georgia's going to be in either way, too, as long as they don't lose this weekend, which I don't think they will. So you can pretty much pencil in Georgia and Bama. Those two are definitely in. Ohio State or Michigan is going to be in. And then Cincinnati has to win out. That's pretty much what it looks like the committee is leaning towards. Moving forward to this weekend, really the only game to watch that's a big game, I mean, I know Bama's playing Auburn, but Bama's going to absolutely destroy Auburn, is Michigan and Ohio State. I think Ohio State's going to absolutely decimate Michigan. I don't think it's going to be a close football game. As much as I would love, above all else, to see Michigan, especially this year, upset Ohio State, Ohio State has figured it out. As much as I root against Ohio State, I can't stand their fans. Their offense is clicking. I'm actually really interested to see Ohio State play Georgia in the playoff. I'm hoping that's the first round matchup. For somehow, way, shape, or form, I'm kind of hoping that Ohio State slips to 4, Georgia stays at 1, and we can get that 1-4 matchup. Or if Bama can beat Georgia in the SEC title game and Georgia slides to either 2 or 3, and we can get Ohio State like that 2-3 matchup. I want to see that in the first round. I don't want to see that in the championship matchup. But I would like to see Georgia's defense against Ohio State's offense. I think that would be the best matchup, or the best college football playoff matchup, in my opinion anyway. But we'll see what happens moving forward. Let's move on to another incredible week in the NFL. This NFL season has just been incredible. It's been the strangest season as long as I can remember. I don't remember a season just being this topsy-turvy with coming in and believing certain teams are better than others, and then the games play out on Sunday. And you honestly just, this is one of those any given Sunday type of years where on any given Sunday, any team can win. And we keep seeing this week after week after week. So with that, let's kick it off. The Sunday Night Football game, Chargers topped the Steelers 41-37. Herbert had 382 yards passing, 3 touchdowns, 1 pick. Big Ben, 273 yards, 3 touchdowns. Big Ben actually played a really good football game, arguably his best game of the season. So Herbert and the Chargers offense bounced back after a lackluster few weeks. The Chargers tried to give the game away once again, but were able to score a late TD. And the Chargers needed this game. They had to win this football game to keep up with Kansas City, who has now usurped them in the AFC West, and the Chiefs look like the Chiefs again. We'll touch on that in a second. Steelers played well. I mean, they played really well in this football game. They came back. They could have pulled this game out if it wasn't for the late touchdown pass from Herbert to Williams. But like the Chargers, this was the first great offensive output in quite a while. Like I said, Big Ben, I think, played the best game of his season this year. And I don't know if the Steelers are necessarily a playoff team, but they're going to be a tough out for anybody who has to play them. They are a good football team. They're another team, as far as I'm concerned, that's a quarterback away. If they had a better quarterback, Steelers would be dangerous right now. That defense is still, I know they got 41 points hung on them, but that defense isn't that bad. It's a Mike Tomlin run defense. It's not that terrible. So I think the Steelers are definitely going to be a destination for a few quarterbacks. Rodgers, Wilson, we'll see what happens. But the Steelers are not a bad football team. This game to me was more about the Chargers needing this win than the Steelers losing. Colts, my Colts, embarrassed the Buffalo Bills 41-15. Carson Wentz, 106 yards passing, one touchdown. He didn't have to do anything in this football game because the game was owned by the running back sensation that is Jonathan Taylor, who had 185 yards on the ground, four touchdowns, and then 19 receiving yards with another TD. So five touchdowns in total. Josh Allen, not a great day. 209 yards passing, two touchdowns, two picks. All right, let's talk about the Bills first, and then I'm going to get in on my Colts. The Bills are starting to reel after a hot start earlier this season. Allen has played himself out of the MVP race. He's out of it. He's done. This loss puts them in second place behind the New England Patriots. They still have two games against the Pats in the coming weeks, which will determine who ultimately wins the division. If the Bills can split 1-1, the Bills still have a shot. If they go 0-2 against the Pats, it's over. I mean, it's not over for the Bills. They'll still make the playoffs. They are a playoff team. This Bills team, though, if you look at who they've beaten, it's not that great. Like, they had a really favorable schedule earlier this season. So they beat the Jaguars and they lost to the Jaguars. They beat the Texans and they beat the Jets twice. And they have beaten the Chiefs, so I will give them that. But they've got some really bad losses too. I mean, the loss to the Jaguars, the loss to the Steelers in week one, the Bills outplayed the Steelers in that game. They should have won that football game. So the Bills have kind of put themselves in a pretty precarious situation here. Do I think they can split against New England? Yeah, I do. I don't think New England's going to go 2-0 against them. But Josh Allen has kind of fallen back to earth a little bit after last season he was incredible. I mean, he was ungodly how good he was last season. So did I believe Allen was going to come back to earth a little bit? Yeah, I did. I didn't think he could necessarily keep up what he did last season. I mean, when you look at his numbers last year, they were unreal. However, he hasn't cratered, but he's definitely taken a larger step back from last season than I was expecting. So he's got to figure his shit out. And unfortunately with the Bills, if Josh Allen has a bad game, the Bills can't do anything. And that's going to be a struggle for the Bills moving forward. So they have to find a way to figure out some way to keep Josh Allen upright and B, be able to make some plays. Because it can't just all fall on Josh Allen's shoulders. Because if it does only fall on Josh Allen's shoulders, this team's not going to go very far in the postseason. All right, let's talk my Colts here. So the Colts owned every aspect of this game. Taylor has inserted himself into the MVP conversation. He's not going to get any votes, but it is fun to talk about. Last year, I was talking about it with Matty Douche the other day about how he had listened to another podcast from The Ringer where they talked about how great of a performance Derrick Henry had last season. The dude received zero MVP votes. So Taylor's not going to get an MVP vote, but it's still fun to just talk about how great and how much he has excelled this season. So if we look ahead here, the Colts have a relatively favorable schedule moving forward. I talked about that a long time ago. I said that they had a gauntlet the first 5 to 6 weeks of the season, and then their schedule kind of opens up for them moving forward. They have proven, though, specifically in this game, they've now won five straight, mind you. They've won five straight. I honestly don't deserve to jump back on my bandwagon because I kicked them to the curb weeks ago. Now, I am excited that they won, but I can't sit here and act as though I've had confidence in this team all along because I haven't. So I'm kind of sitting back in silence watching this team because I've had people say, oh, man, you must be really excited to be a Colts fan. You must be pumped right now. Yes, I'm pumped, but it's a weird thing as a fan where I kick them to the curb, so it's very hard for me to take to really be completely jovial about how well they're playing because I feel kind of like a fraud. Because I did. I kicked them to the curb after that loss to Baltimore, and especially after that loss to the second loss that they had to Tennessee, where I was like, season's over, they're done, put a fork in them, I'm done with them. And since then, they've won five straight. So they are playing tremendous football. I think they can be a seventh seed. I don't know if they're going to be able to catch the Titans. Because they're 0-2. They're 0-2 against them. So the Titans are going to own the tiebreaker. The Titans are really going to have to fall flat on their face for the Colts to be able to catch them. But I do think the Colts can make the wild card, which is something that I didn't even think was going to be possible, mainly because nobody seems to want to take the AFC. And that's why I talked in the open of this segment. This is the craziest NFL season I can remember. So because nobody wants to run away with the AFC, the Colts are very much in the playoff picture. So given their favorable schedule and the fact that they showed in this football game that they can hang with anybody, I like this team moving forward. I really do. I think the Colts can finally make the postseason. And given the way the season's going, maybe they can make some noise in the playoffs. It obviously, matchups are going to matter. It's going to depend on who they face off against early on. But they could definitely make some noise, especially if they keep clicking. And real quick on Carson Wentz. Wentz has not had to do much. He didn't have to do anything in this game. I mean, again, he threw for one touchdown pass. He threw for 106 yards. I think he completed, it was like 10 or 11 passes. Like, he did not have to do anything in this football game. But he's not turning the ball over. And he's doing what he needs to do to win games. And to me, that's all I wanted from him. That's why I believe that this was the right place for him. And I'm pumped. I'm pumped for him. I'm pumped for the team. Let's see what happens as we move forward. Chiefs embarrassed the Cowboys 19-9. I know the game seems close. It wasn't close. It was not. This game wasn't close, but it was one of the ugliest football games I've watched in a long time. Pat Mahomes, 260 yards, 0 touchdowns, 1 pick, and a fumble. Prescott, 216 yards, 0 touchdowns, 2 picks. The Chiefs controlled this game from the jump. I mean, from kickoff, this game was over. Their defense shut down an injury-riddled Dallas offense. The Chiefs' offense is still not, quote-unquote, back. They had so many opportunities to make this a 20- to 30-point blowout. And Mahomes continues to play subpar. So we're getting to the point where, and everyone is making excuses for Mahomes. Here's the deal. If you're going to tell me that Patrick Mahomes is the greatest quarterback of all time, or he is on the trajectory to be the greatest quarterback of all time, he needs to stop turning the ball over. This is, I believe, the sixth game this season where he has turned the ball over at least 2 times. He leads the league in that category. And this is another game where he's thrown for 0 touchdowns. He's had 2 games this season where he's thrown for 0 touchdowns. Yes, I know the dude's like top 3 in passing yards. He's top 3 in touchdowns thrown. And I think he's top 4 or 5 in completion percentage. That's great. That's wonderful. That's great that he can stat pad. You want to know who's another great player that can stat pad? LeBron James. So while his stats may look great, he's not the reason the Chiefs are winning these games. Surprisingly, it's that defense. And then we look at the Cowboys. The Cowboys have injury concerns. Cooper and Lamb on offense are just a few of the names that they lost. They had a few guys out on defense as well. And this is the second time in 3 games where Prescott played like hot garbage. For a guy who just signed a massive contract that everybody was celebrating, he hasn't played well the past couple weeks. He's, by the way, as far as I'm concerned, he's out of the MVP conversation. He's out too. That MVP conversation, I'm actually going to touch on in my last word segment. It's crazy where that's going. But he looked off from the first drive, and while he was playing with an injury-riddled receiving core, and I take that into account when I'm, say, look, he's playing with nobody on offense aside from Ezekiel Elliott, that doesn't excuse 2 really, really crappy performances in 3 weeks. Because against the Denver Broncos, he had everybody healthy. Everyone was healthy. I understand he was coming back after a missed game, but you cannot call this dude an elite quarterback in the league when you have 2 out of 3 games looking as pathetic as he has. Because he has. He's looked dreadful in 2 of the last 3 games. So if you want to call him elite, you better explain to me how an elite quarterback can look this bad, especially against a potential Super Bowl team, the Kansas City Chiefs. The Minnesota Vikings squeaked by the Packers 34-31. Kirk Cousins had 341 yards passing, 3 touchdowns. Aaron Rodgers, 385 yards, 4 touchdowns. Kirk Cousins played well in an incredible division matchup. This game, I think, was the best game of the weekend. Jefferson had his best game all season with 8 receptions for 169 yards and 2 touchdowns. And the Vikings pulled off a 2-minute drive, which ended with a last-second field goal. This team is way, way too talented to be 5-5. Now, I watched this game, and I was flipping back and forth between this game and the Bills and Colts game. And once the Colts game was out of reach, I was watching this game. And the Vikings are really good. I mean, I've seen highlights of the Vikings, but I haven't really watched more than maybe a couple minutes of a Vikings game here and there. I watched the last two quarters of that football game. That Vikings offense is ridiculous. I mean, we're looking at a Vikings offense that is reminiscent of the Culpepper, Moss, and Chris Carter days. This, in my opinion, and while Kirk Cousins I don't think is as good as Dante Culpepper, because Dante Culpepper I think was criminally underrated, Cousins is still good enough to make this team go. And he's been great this season. If you look at his numbers, I would never put Kirk Cousins in the MVP conversation. But if you look at his numbers, he is playing out of his mind this season. He also has he has arguably the best receiving core in football. I mean, the one-two matchup of Thielen and Jefferson, I think is unmatched right now. Because even, I know the Rams have Cooper Kupp and Woods, but I don't think it's like this. I mean, I think Jefferson and Thielen are the best 1-2 combo going in the NFL right now. This team is going to be a problem in the playoffs. They're going to make the playoffs. They're going to be a 7th or 6th seed or whatever it may be, but they're going to be a wild card team. And no one is going to want to face this football team in the playoffs. You can give me all the Kirk Cousins can't perform in prime time or in big games all you want. He did win a big playoff game in New Orleans a couple years ago. So he has proven that he can do it. I know it was only one time, but he has proven that he can do it. And if this team is fully healthy, you do not want to face them in the playoffs. I'm sorry. Like, their offense is unbelievable. And that defense isn't that bad. I know they gave up 31 to the Packers, but their defense is pretty damn good. Then we look at the Packers, man. Aaron Rodgers was incredible, even without a star running back. Once again, Rodgers is let down by his defense. And he was. He was let down by his defense. They had picked Kirk off on that last minute drive before the on their way to that they eventually did kick that game winning field goal. The cornerback had the ball. He was coming down to the ground. He bobbled it literally in the last millisecond, and the ball hit the ground. And that squandered the opportunity for the Packers. Because we all know that if that pick had stood, Green Bay would have driven down that field. They would have either scored a touchdown or kicked a field goal to win the game. And that would have been it. So Rodgers, as far as I'm concerned right now, is top two for MVP. You look at his numbers. You look at what he's done. Aaron Rodgers is playing incredible. Now, will he get MVP votes? Absolutely not. The media hates him. The media absolutely hates Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers has no... The only way Aaron Rodgers would get any type of MVP love is he would have to melt the faces off of the media over the next few weeks. Like, he would have to average 4 to 5 touchdown passes a game for the remainder of the season, because then they would have to give it to him just based off of his performance. Rodgers has no shot of getting any type of MVP love. But if you look at the numbers and you look at what he's done, I mean, he's played excellent football all but, I think, 1 week of the season. All right, let's move on to some other news and notes around the league. The Arizona Cardinals improved to 2-1 without Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins as they beat up on the Seahawks 23-13. Seahawks, as I said last week, are done. Russell Wilson doesn't look healthy, and Russell Wilson actually looks like crap. He's playing awful. He's thrown 0 touchdowns since he's returned from his injury. Don't expect to see Wilson on this team come 2022. He's going to look to go somewhere else. He was bitching last season. I can only imagine what he's going to say after this offseason. Or once this offseason comes to play. Cliff Kingsbury, by the way, continues to be my coach of the year. You go 2-1 in division. You go 2-0 in division. 2-1 overall without your two star offensive weapons. How can you not vote for Cliff Kingsbury for coach of the year at this point? You can give me all you want about, oh, Cliff Kingsbury's overrated, blah, blah, blah. No, he's not. You can't tell me Cliff Kingsbury is not a good coach anymore. He's gone 2-1 without Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins. So just stop it. You sound ridiculous. Washington completely blew up Cam Newton's first start of the season. Tyler Heinicke, 206 yards, 3 touchdowns. Cam Newton, 189 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 1 rushing touchdown. Cam Newton, unfortunately, wasn't able to pull this one out in the end. Neither team is a playoff team, but you got to give all the credit in the world to Washington, who continues to surprise many of us who wrote them off earlier this season. I thought they were dead in the water. I figured they were going to win 3-4 games after what we saw. They've won a few games, and they beat two good teams the past 2 weeks. I mean, Carolina's out of the playoffs, so maybe they're not that great of a football team, but they did embarrass Tom Brady and the Bucs, so there's that. Eagles down the Saints 40-29. Hurts, zero passing touchdowns, but he had three rushing touchdowns. Trevor Siemian, who is just abysmal. 214 yards, three touchdowns, and two picks. I don't know how many of you out there still believe that Sean Payton is a top offensive coach, with given the fact that Trevor Siemian was his backup. I'm sorry. There is no excuse for Trevor Siemian to be a backup. Also, the Saints are not a playoff team. Not with Trevor Siemian as a quarterback, they're not. The Saints have a lot of talent, both on offense and defense, a lot of great skill players. Without a quarterback, this team's a joke. And Trevor Siemian is just, it blows my mind how you can say Sean Payton is a top offensive genius with Trevor Siemian. Why Trevor Siemian? I just don't understand it. You're never going to be able to convince me anymore that Sean Payton's a top offensive mind with Trevor Siemian at quarterback. That he's evaluated all of these other quarterbacks out there. You had the option to go get Jacoby Brissett. You could have gotten Colt McCoy, who Arizona has. You could have gone after Blaine Gabbert, for Christ's sakes. And instead, you get Trevor Siemian. That's your backup? Come on, man. Get out of here. The Eagles are shockingly and unfortunately for me, have won more than four games this season, which does not bode well for me. I now have to wear Daisy Dukes at some point near the end of the football season because I made a bet with Richo and our buddy Landon that their Eagles would not win more than four games because, frankly, I didn't believe that they could. But given the fact that this season is as insane as it has been, your boy's going to be rocking some Daisy Dukes, and there'll be more information on that as we move later on into the season. The Eagles have been a really strong, they have a really strong running attack, and when the play calling is right, they can be a nuisance for any defense. Their run-pass option game is strong, and I definitely misjudged this team early this season. They're actually a pretty good football team, and they're kind of fun to watch. I never thought that would ever come out of my mouth, but I don't think they're a playoff team. I know a lot of people are like, oh, you know, they could sneak in. I don't think so. I don't think they're a playoff team, but they're a lot better than I would have ever given them credit for a few weeks ago. So my picks suck. I mean, they've sucked all season. I've been doing the whole gambling thing, giving you point spreads, and I'm done. I'm done giving you point spreads because if you've actually listened to me, you've lost a lot of money. So I'm just going to give you straight up who I think is going to win from here on out. I'll tell you what the point spreads are, but I'm just going to tell you who's going to win the football game because I'm so far under 500 at this point. It's just not even worth giving you my total win-loss record. So the four games to watch this week: Titans at Patriots, Bucks at Colts, Vikings at 49ers, Rams at Packers. Titans at Patriots, the Pats are a 5.5-point favorite against the Titans. I think the Patriots are going to win this football game. I think they're a better football team than the Titans, and they're at home. So I think the Patriots are going to win this game in relatively easy fashion. The Bucks at the Colts, I think this game is going to be closer than people think. I'm going to take the Bucks to win, but I think it's going to be pretty damn close. Look, obviously, they're my team. I want to see the Colts win this game. I would love to see the Colts upset Tom Brady. That would the joy that would bring me is just... I can't describe it because I understand he's not on the Patriots anymore, but there's still that rivalry. I still feel that Peyton Manning, Tom Brady rivalry. I always will whenever Brady plays against the Colts. I would love to see the Colts, you know, like I say, get that upset. But realistically speaking, I do think the Bucs are the better football team. So I will take the Bucs probably to win by three over the Colts. Vikings at 49ers. The Vikings are a 2.5-point dog at San Francisco. I like the Vikings here to win this football game. 49ers don't have a home field advantage. They're not great at home. We talked about it last week when they finally won for the first time in eight games at Levi Stadium. They don't have a home field advantage. And as I talked about earlier with the Vikings team is good. That offense is prolific. And I just do. I think the Vikings are an overall better football team than the 49ers. So I would take the Vikings here. And then the Rams at the Packers. This is easily the game of the week. The Packers are a 1.5-point favorite over the Rams at home. I like the Packers in this football game. The Rams are my preseason Super Bowl pick. Matt Stafford would be my preseason MVP pick. I like the Packers here. I think Rodgers is gonna come out guns blazing after that close loss last week to Minnesota. He's gonna be pissed off. The Rams, I know they're now 0-2 in their last two games. They desperately need a win, so I expect the Rams to come out swinging as well, which is why I think this is the game of the week. I think it's going to be a very, very close football game, but I like the Packers here. I think Aaron Rodgers is going to prove to be the better quarterback. He's going to prove to be just the better player on the football field. So I like the Packers to win this in a very close game. So to recap real quick, I've got the Patriots winning. I've got the Bucks winning. I have the Vikings over the 49ers, and I have the Green Bay Packers over the LA Rams. So whenever we're talking about who the GOAT is for a particular sport, everyone says, you know, it's specifically what goes on the field, right? Or on the court or on the diamond, whatever it may be. And I agree with that. But it should be everything that takes place on the court, on the diamond, on the field. So that encompasses everything from your leadership to your on-field persona or on-court persona to how many baskets you score, how many touchdowns you throw, how many home runs you hit. Everything should be taken into account if you're going to declare somebody to be the GOAT. With all that being said, I don't understand how people can continue to talk about LeBron James in the same conversation as Michael Jordan. Hell, I don't even understand how you can talk about LeBron James in the same conversation as Magic Johnson or Kareem. After the shit he pulled the other night in Detroit, I don't understand how you people can still be out there waving pom-poms for LeBron. He recklessly hit Isaiah Stewart in the eye. And it was intentional, and it was dirty, and it was gross. For those of you who don't know, there's a free throw shot that went up. Shot went in. That's besides the point. LeBron swung his arm as a quote-unquote box out move, even though it wasn't. He had a closed fist, and he swung his arm as hard as he could, caught Isaiah across the eyebrow, and then started walking away, and then immediately turned around and did the, oh, my bad thing. Here's the thing, though. When a player does that, like, A, you knew it was intentional. You knew it was intentional because it was a closed fist. It would be one thing if it was like an open hand and he was just kind of, you know, swinging his arm out to try and get that box out and he incidentally connected with the eye. That's one thing. And you could say, look, he clearly didn't do it on purpose. He had a closed fist and he was swinging that hand. And you knew it was intentional. And he knew he did it on purpose. And usually when a player, again, doesn't intentionally and then walks over to the player like, oh, my bad. That's him hoping that the ref is going to not give him a flagrant two and kick him out of the basketball game. That's what that is. That's like the, oh, I'm going to show a little contrition here. Hopefully you won't punish me to the fullest extent. That's obviously what LeBron did. And immediately, you know, but immediately, like, the teams come around the two players. And it wasn't until Stewart saw that he was bleeding. Like, initially, Stewart was kind of dazed for a second. And then as soon as he saw he was bleeding, he was screw this. I want LeBron. Give me LeBron. And he was going after LeBron. And if you, like, screw the Stewart thing. Anybody, real quick here, we're going to side, because this is more about LeBron than it is about Stewart's reaction. Everyone out there who's crucifying Stewart and saying he overreacted, my God, he was like a madman out there. Anybody who's played any type of basketball, whether it's pickup basketball or you played some sort of organized basketball, rec league, high school, college, hell, even middle school, it doesn't matter. If a player does that to you, if an opposing player swings his arm and connects with you with a closed fist and you start bleeding, I don't care in what setting, you're going to go after that guy. If you have any respect for yourself, you're going to go after that guy. So for everyone and the fact that he was suspended more games than LeBron James is baffling, is absolutely, it's just, it shows you the double standard in the NBA. You know, all you sycophantic NBA fans out there who think Adam Silver is the second coming, the dude loves LeBron to an absurd level, to just favors LeBron in just an unreal way. The fact that Stewart, who was the wronged party in this entire thing, gets suspended more games than LeBron is a joke. Okay. So I just want to put that out there right now. He didn't overreact. He reacted any way anybody else would have. And he wanted a piece of LeBron. And so this brings me back to LeBron. LeBron acted like a tough guy for 2 seconds, like standing there and being like, yo, I'm sorry, man, I'm sorry, until Stewart realized he was bleeding. And you could see it. All of a sudden, Stewart's eyes changed, and he himself wanted blood, meaning he wanted to go after LeBron. And at that moment, there was another video that was taken because, of course, the ESPN and TNT and all the other cameras, they didn't show this. Fortunately, there are people who are at the games who put this stuff on Twitter. As soon as Isaiah was like, screw this, I'm going after him, LeBron cowered away like a child. He cowered away. He backed up so fast and was literally moving people in front of him because he didn't want Stewart to get him. LeBron is a pussy. Remember, this is the same guy who you breathe on him and he collapses like he's playing, like he's in the middle of the pitch, grabbing his ankle when his shoulder was what got whacked by a player. He is the biggest drama queen going in the NBA. So think about it. LeBron takes a cheap shot at a guy, and rather than being able to be man enough to stand there and take a shot back, or at least stand his ground when Stewart's losing his mind and being like, I want a piece of you. And the fact that you need to get Anthony Davis and Russell Westbrook to fight your battles for you, that's not leadership. That's not being the king. That's not being the goat. It's being a coward. LeBron James is a coward. And not only is he a coward on the court, he's a coward off the court. LeBron has no problem voicing his opinion about anything, whether it comes to politics, whether it comes to anything else going on in the sports, entertainment, culture, the pop culture zeitgeist. He's always on Twitter. He's always on Instagram. He's always running his dumbass mouth about something stupid, just bloviating his ignorance for everyone to see. Doesn't speak to the media after the game. Runs away and hides in the locker room. And then runs away to whether it was the bus or wherever the fuck he went after the game. Doesn't talk to the media. Doesn't go on Twitter. All of a sudden, he's disappeared. He still hasn't even spoken about it. I'm recording this Wednesday. He has yet to say a single word about the incident. That's cowardice. You have no problem calling out anybody else in the league when they fuck up. You have no problem saying anything that doesn't negatively affect you. But the minute you screw up, you do something wrong, you don't have the balls to stand in front of the media and take the slings and arrows. Instead, you again have Anthony Davis and Russell Westbrook take it for you. How is that leadership? Explain to me how that's leadership. How that's GOAT status. Because it's not. Look, man, there's very, very few things that irritate me more than the sycophantic love of LeBron James. I will take all the sycophantic love of Patrick Mahomes. I will live with that for the rest of my life, and I can swallow that and I can deal with it. Because here's the deal. I like Patrick Mahomes. That's the secret thing that nobody realizes. I really like the guy. I think he's cool. He's one of the players that I wish that I could root for him, but given my stance and how hardened of a stance I've taken against him, I can't. But he's not somebody that I would ever get angry about. Like, if he ever actually did become the GOAT, like if he broke Tom Brady's records and won all these Super Bowls and ended up being better than Rodgers and better than Herbert and better than everybody who's ever come before him, Peyton Manning, doesn't matter. I could live with that. I could sit back and go, damn it, I was wrong. It's more of a fact that I want to be right about Patrick Mahomes than anything else. But I could live with all the love that people want to throw in a door at Patrick Mahomes. I can't stand all this bullshit that is spewed about LeBron James. It honestly makes me sick. It doesn't affect me in any way, obviously. I don't know the guy. Whether you love or don't love LeBron James, or whether LeBron James is considered the GOAT or not, is it really going to affect me? No. But as a person who has morals, who has ethics, who tries to live his life the best way possible, seeing a guy like that, who honestly is not a good person, LeBron James is not a good person. And that's the thing that bothers me more than anything else, is when you see nasty human beings succeed. That bothers me. And the fact that this guy is heralded as this virtuous, wonderful human being who stands up for all the right things, and he's always done the right thing in the media's eye, is bullshit. It's just absolute bullshit. The guy has never said a smart thing in his life. As far as I'm concerned, he's never done the right thing on the court. This is the same guy who went to Miami, bragged about how the team was going to win like 20 championships, and flamed out in the first finals with that team, was a no-show. And then when he had to face the media, when the media criticized him and was like, yo, you didn't show up in this game. You didn't show up in the finals at all. And his words to them were, yeah, well, you know, while you guys can hate on me and blah, 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 I still get to be LeBron James and you have to go back to your pathetic lives. That was his reaction. Rather than sitting there and going, you know what? I sucked. You guys are right. I have to play better. I have to be better. I promised Miami a championship and I'm going to deliver that championship. Instead, he deflected and criticized the media for rightfully criticizing him. That's the kind of man LeBron James is. LeBron James wants to talk to the media and be front and center when everything's going good. But the minute things go bad, where is he? Where is he? He's hiding somewhere. He's hiding behind Anthony Davis and Russell Westbrook. He's taking everybody else that he can and throwing them in front of him as a shield. Because he's too much of a pathetic coward to actually be a man and stand up for the mistakes and the errors that he makes. That's not GOAT status. And if you all don't see that by now, no one can help you. So the MVP race in the NFL is just, it's absurd this year. Usually by this time, you kind of got two or three guys that you feel pretty comfortable about saying, okay, this guy's going to win it. Or these three guys are now competing. This season, it's been topsy-turvy. I gave you my MVP picks, or at least who I thought were like the top five or six MVP guys a few weeks ago. And I couldn't give you a list right now because I truly don't know who I would even vote for. Because it for me at this point, I kind of got to see what happens the remainder of the season. But with that being said, I was thinking about this when I was talking about Josh Allen earlier. And the fact that when we talk about MVP, we always focus on the numbers. But the whole point of the award is most valuable player, meaning most valuable to their team. And I think there's five players in the league, more so than any others, that are the most valuable to their team, meaning that if they don't play well, their team does not succeed. And those players are as follows. You've got two running backs, which I think are pretty clear at this point, Derrick Henry and Jonathan Taylor. If Taylor doesn't play well, the Colts don't win. I mean, that's just that. Those are facts. Love Carson Wentz, but those are facts. Jonathan Taylor is the face of that team right now. He is their MVP. Derrick Henry, we've already seen what Ryan Tannehill can do with and without Derrick Henry. Now, I think the Ryan Tannehill hate's coming on a little fast and strong here. But again, I've never been the biggest Tannehill guy either. So I do understand where people are coming from, where if you look at Tannehill's numbers with Derrick Henry on the field and what he does without Derrick Henry on the field, there is a big bit of a chasm there. However, the Titans haven't done him any favors either when they got rid of all of his offensive talent last year, and all the players that they brought in this year are all injured. So there's that. But anyway, Derrick Henry is certainly the most valuable player to his team. Then you look at Josh Allen. Without Josh Allen, like I said earlier, if Josh Allen doesn't play well, the Bills suck. Josh Allen, it's all on Josh Allen's shoulders. Now, mind you, he is the quarterback. He is making a lot of money. He just signed for a massive contract. So yes, should it all be on his shoulders? Sure, you could say that. But at the same time, you also got to realize that if all falls on him, he needs to be in consideration for MVP. Although I don't think he should be because of how he's played. And that's my point, is he hasn't played well enough to be MVP, but he is the most valuable player to his team. Aaron Rodgers, the same thing. We've already seen what happens when the Packers don't have Aaron Rodgers. Look at what Jordan Love did against Kansas City. We all know that if Aaron Rodgers was out there against Kansas City, the Packers would have won that football game. That's indisputable at this point. Now, here are players that you would think would be the most valuable players to their team, but this season has kind of shown otherwise. Dak Prescott being one. Cooper Rush stepped in and won a football game against the Minnesota Vikings. Colt McCoy has stepped in and been able to win two football games without Kyler Murray. I'm not saying Kyler Murray doesn't deserve to be an MVP consideration because I still think he does. But without him, you know, they can still win games. The only other player that I think is, it's pretty obvious, is the most valuable player to his team is Lamar Jackson. Now, I know the Ravens just won against the Bears, but A, the Bears are trash. And number two, they barely won that football game. To me, that was more about John Harbaugh's coaching than it was about the Ravens team, because that game was a struggle throughout. The Bears were winning that entire football game up until the last quarter. So I think those are your five players that are the most valuable to their team. You have Josh Allen, Aaron Rodgers, Lamar Jackson, Derrick Henry, and Jonathan Taylor. You look at, and everyone else is, I can already hear it, you get Pat Mahomes, Tom Brady. No, they're not the most valuable players to their teams, because look at who they have as skilled players. Pat Mahomes can be the best quarterback in football. You can say that. This isn't that type of debate, but take Pat Mahomes out there and insert another quarterback with Travis Kelce, with Hill, with Andy Reid as head coach, with all the skill players that Pat Mahomes has around him. This is not me knocking Patrick Mahomes. I'm just trying to make a point here. You could insert another quarterback. Same thing in Tampa Bay. Put another quarterback in there with all of the weapons that Brady has, and they would be pretty successful. You could put Jared Goff in Tampa Bay, and Tampa Bay could win some football games. So that's the point that I'm trying to make, is that I think we overlook who is the actually most valuable to their team and just look at stats. And we kind of just, we don't look at all the skill players and how much rests on certain players' shoulders in order for their team to be successful. So again, I think the most valuable players to their teams, specifically this season, you have Josh Allen, you have Lamar Jackson, Aaron Rodgers, Jonathan Taylor, and Derrick Henry. You can make an argument, by the way, for Russell Wilson as well, but Russell Wilson has played so poorly, it doesn't even matter, because I don't think the Seahawks were going to go anywhere this season anyway. But you could have made an argument in the past for Russell Wilson being that one other player. So in closing, I don't really have like a specific closing to go with this segment. I just want to say that I really think that it's an interesting thing to think about as we move forward this season, given the fact that the MVP award, I think, is going to be a toss-up the rest of the way, unless one particular player just completely annihilates their opponents, with the remaining games this season. I think it's just interesting to really consider who deserves to win MVP, meaning who really truly is the most valuable player to their team's overall success. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the LaValley Sports Talk Podcast, brought to you by the Soundline Network. As always, thank you so much for tuning and listening. We really appreciate it. Please be sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, be sure to check out the Richo and Lala Thanksgiving Special, which just came out yesterday, Thursday morning. We decided to put out a nice little Thanksgiving special for everybody. Be sure to check that out. And that's it. That's all I have for you this week. Hope you all be well. Stay safe. Talk to you all again soon.